Imagine, for a moment, a small bakery on a Saturday morning. The baker has been up for hours. The ovens have been preheating since before sunrise, and the warm, yeasty smell of rising dough fills every corner of the small back room. On the long wooden table, covered in flour, sit two large bowls, each one covered with a clean cloth. Inside each bowl is a round of dough that the baker shaped late last night and left to rise slowly in the cold of the walk-in. He just brought them out, set them on the table, and pulled back the cloth to check on them. He stands over the bowls for a moment, his hands behind his back, and he just looks. The first dough has nearly doubled in size, its surface smooth and slightly domed, the kind of dough that, when you press a finger into it gently, the indentation springs back slowly, almost lazily. The second dough has barely risen at all. It sits there, dense and tight, almost the same size as when he shaped it. He looks at both, considers, and then he moves. The first dough he carries to the table, dusts it with flour, and begins to shape it into the loaves he will bake in the next hour. The second dough he wraps the cloth back over, and he carries it to the warmer corner of the kitchen, near the proofing oven, and he sets it down. He has decided, in those few seconds of looking, that the first dough is ready, and the second dough needs more time. What he just did, in that quiet moment of decision, is what almost every interesting program in the world is doing, constantly. Looking at a value, asking a question about it, and then taking one course of action if the answer is yes, and a different course of action if the answer is no. That branching path, that small fork in the road where the program looks at what it has and chooses what to do next, is what we're going to talk about today. This is Rust, gently. A patient introduction to how computers actually work and to one particular language for talking to them. I am your host. This is episode 12, Making Choices. Today, you're going to learn the small shape of an if-then-else decision in Rust. By the end of the episode, you will be able to read a piece of Rust that asks a question and that does one thing if the answer is yes and a different thing if the answer is no. You will also see a small twist in how Rust handles decisions, a twist that is genuinely beautiful once you see it, and that makes Rust code do something most other languages cannot. Let me back up to why decisions exist in a program in the first place. So far, the programs we have looked at have been straight lines. The Hello World from episode 7, three lines, all of them just doing the next thing in order. The labeled box examples from episode 8, sitting still, holding values. The arithmetic from episode 10, working forward, one operation after another. None of those programs ever had to decide what to do next. They just did the steps in order from top to bottom, and then they ended. But a real program almost never works that way. A real program runs into questions all the time. Is the user logged in? Is this file empty? Is the total over $100? Did the customer enter a valid email address? Did the previous step succeed, or did it fail? Each one of those questions has a yes or no answer, and depending on the answer, the program has to take a different path. The program that calculates the price of someone's grocery order needs to ask, did this customer enter a coupon code? And if so, apply the discount. And if not, skip that step. The program that handles your bank transactions needs to ask, does this account have enough money to cover the withdrawal? And if so, do the withdrawal. And if not, refuse it. These branching paths are everywhere in real software. And the small shape that lets a program make them is the if statement. Let me show you what an if statement in Rust looks like. The shape goes like this. The keyword if, a space, a condition that produces a true or false answer, a space, an opening curly brace, then on the next line or lines, the work that should happen if the answer is true, then a closing curly brace. Optionally, after that closing brace, the keyword else, a space, another opening curly brace, then the work that should happen if the answer was false, then another closing brace. Let me read a small example out loud. Imagine we have a variable called total that holds a number. We want to give the customer a discount if their total is over $100. The piece of Rust that does that might say the keyword if, a space, the name total, then a greater than sign, then the number 100, then a space, then an opening curly brace. On the next line, indented in, the line says the keyword let the name discount and equal sign, the variable total, then a star, then the decimal value 0.1, then a semicolon. That line creates a discount equal to 10% of the total. The next line, still inside the first set of braces, prints a message thanking the customer for spending so much. Then the closing curly brace. Then on the same line, the keyword else, a space, another opening curly brace. Then inside that block, perhaps a line that prints a different message, suggesting the customer add something to their cart. Then the closing curly brace. When the program runs, it looks at the condition. It asks, is the value in total greater than 100? If yes, it runs everything inside the first set of braces and skips the else block entirely. If no, it skips the first set of braces and runs everything inside the else block instead. Only one of the two paths is ever taken, depending on the answer to the question. The fork in the road. The baker looking at the two bowls of dough. If you have more than two cases, you can chain them. The shape is if some condition, do this, else if some other condition, do that, else if yet another condition, do that other thing, and finally else the catch-all for everything else. You can have as many of these middle else if blocks as you need. Russ will check them in order, top to bottom, and as soon as one of them matches, it runs that block and stops checking the rest. Now, here's where Rust does something genuinely different from most languages, and it is worth slowing down for. In most languages, an if statement is just a statement. It runs one block or the other, and then the program continues. In Rust, an if statement is also an expression. The whole if-else block has a value. Whichever block ran, the last expression in that block, the one with no semicolon, becomes the value of the entire if-else. This means you can write a line that says the keyword let the name discount an equal sign, the keyword if, then a condition, then a block that produces one value, then else, then a block that produces a different value, then a semicolon. The variable discount gets set to whichever of the two values came out of the if-else, all in one line. There is no intermediate variable. There is no need to assign discount inside both branches. The branching itself produces the value, and the value flows directly into the assignment. This sounds small. It is not. It is one of the design choices that makes Rust code read more like a single flowing expression, less like a sequence of imperative commands. It is something you will see in real Rust code all the time, and once you're used to it, you find yourself missing it in other languages. Let me give you a concrete picture, because the idea reads more clearly in the imagination than in the abstract. Say a program is calculating shipping. The shipping cost depends on the total weight of the package. If the weight is under 1 kilogram, the cost is $5. If it is between 1 and 5 kilograms, the cost is $12. If it is over 5 kilograms, the cost is $25. In a language without if as expression, you would write three separate assignments inside three separate branches, each one setting a shipping cost variable to a different value. And at the end of the if-else, the shipping cost variable holds whichever value matched. That works, but it has more moving parts than it needs to. In Rust, you write a single line that says, let shipping equal an if-else that checks the weight, and the whole branching structure produces a single value that flows directly into shipping. The variable is set exactly once, in the exact place where it should be set, and there is no risk of someone accidentally forgetting to update one of the branches if the rules change later. The whole logic of the decision lives in one block, with one outcome and one assignment. There is one more small thing about if-else in Rust that you will see constantly in real code, and that you should know about before we close. Rust insists, when an if-else is used as an expression, that both branches produce values of the same type. You cannot have one branch produce a number and the other branch produce a piece of text, because then the variable receiving the result would not know what type to be. The compiler catches this immediately and refuses to translate the program. As with every other piece of Rust we have looked at, the strictness is not punishment. It is a small fence around a class of bugs that, in other languages, you might only discover in production. When a user enters an unusual input and the program suddenly hands a number to something that was expecting a string. For you, working alongside an artificial intelligence agent, this means that when the agent produces an if-else block, you can read it as a single calculation, not just a sequence of side effects. The agent's intent is captured more directly. The branches produce values. Those values flow into variables. The program reads as something close to mathematics, where every expression has a clear meaning and contributes to a clear result. It is one of the small reasons that reviewing Rust code is, after the initial steepness of a learning curve, often easier than reviewing the equivalent in other languages. In production, if-else blocks are doing some of the most consequential work in software. The Cloudflare proxy, on every incoming request, makes hundreds of small decisions, each one an if-else. Is this request a known bot? Is the destination in the rate limit? Has the user already been authenticated? The decisions cascade, each one feeding into the next. All of them written as small if-else blocks in Rust, all of them returning their values directly into the next step of the calculation. The same pattern plays out in databases, in inference engines, in operating system kernels. Decisions are how a program turns inputs into outputs that actually depend on what the inputs were, and the small if-else shape is the building block on which all of that decision-making is built. There is one more pattern worth mentioning, because it is a Rust-specific cousin of the if-else, and you will run into it the moment you start reading any serious Rust codebase. It is called match, and it is what you reach for when the decision has more than two or three branches, and you want the compiler to make sure you have handled every possibility. Match takes a value and lists out all the cases that value might be in, with the work to do in each case. We're not going to go deep on match today because it deserves its own episode, but I want you to know it exists because match plus if-else together cover almost every decision-making situation a Rust program ever runs into. When you see match in code the agent has written, just know that it is the same family of idea as if-else, with more structure and more help from the compiler. Three things to carry away from today. The first is that a decision in a program is just the small shape if, then a condition, then a block to run if the condition is true, then optionally else, and a block to run if it is false. And that shape is how every interesting program in the world branches its behavior based on what it has in front of it. The second is that in Rust, the if-else is not just a statement, but an expression with a value, which means the whole branching block can flow directly into a variable assignment without an intermediate step. The third is that real production software is built on top of cascades of these small if-else decisions, each one tiny on its own, but collectively responsible for almost every meaningful behavior any program has ever produced. Next time on Rust, gently, we will look at what happens when a program needs to do the same thing over and over on many different values without writing out the work each time. We will meet the idea of a loop, and we will see how a few small shapes in a language let a program patiently work its way through a list of 1,000 things, or 1,000,000, or 1,000,000,000, with no more code than it took to handle the first one. Until then, take good care of yourself. I will see you in the next one.